Great. Good afternoon. My name is Vanessa Courier-Olson. I am a forage extension specialist with Texas A&M AgriLife Extension at the Overton Research and Extension Center. I'm here today because I am standing in proxy for Dr. Gerald Ray Smith, who is also out of the Overton Center. He is our legume breeder, and so I'm speaking on his behalf today. So today I'm basically going to focus on three different legume breeding programs that are in different locations of the United States, and they're part of a grant specifically. So our previous speakers have all defined cover crops, and we pretty much all have the same definition in regards to their importance in reducing soil erosion, providing some weed competition, or helping to suppress weeds for the following crop, as well as providing some nutrient management and maintaining our soils, and then also with the advantage of utilizing our legumes in regards to recycling some nitrogen for that following crop. So the programs that I'm going to cover in this presentation are Dr. Smith at the Overton Center with Texas A&M AgriLife Research, where he focuses on winter as well as summer annual legumes, and we'll talk about those. And then I'm also going to cover two programs with USDA ARS out of Madison, Wisconsin, and then Pullman, Washington, on those specific legumes that they're doing breeding research on. So these programs are linked, oddly enough, since their locations are not compatible necessarily, but they're linked because of an OREI grant entitled Creating the Cover Crops that Organic Farmers Need, Delivering Regionally Adapted Varieties Across America. So with cover crops, we generally think of a winter annual cover crop, whether that's a legume or, as Edzard mentioned earlier, an annual ryegrass or a small grain. We commonly use annual rye in Texas as part of that cover crop system to prevent soil erosion during that winter season, as well as to capture any water. Oftentimes that's a limiting resource, especially in parts of Texas. This cover crop could also be applied to a summer annual legume or a summer crop to basically provide the same, prevent soil erosion and capture water during that time. And obviously a legume, like I mentioned, has the ability to capture, and we can recycle some nitrogen for the following season's crop. So crop rotation, these are just some definitions. Crop rotation, two or more crops grown in sequence, such as a corn-soybean rotation, 1 year of each. Obviously, it's used to manage soil nutrients as well as to potentially break any disease or pest cycles that are occurring for those different crops. Double cropping, which cowpeas are the legume that are the seeds that are pictured there on the left, can be used for double cropping, planting a second crop immediately following the harvest of the first crop, which allows harvesting two crops from the same field in 1 year, so maximizing use of space. An example would be the summer cowpea seed crop that's pictured there, along with a winter forage rye for a grazing crop, which we do often in Texas or in East Texas. So we're going to start with Dr. Rebecca McGee, her program, breeding autumn sown pulsed crops, specifically winter peas. So some of her major issues and concerns within her program consist of optimal planting time and methods, effective and efficient weed control, market class acceptance, resistance to biotic and abiotic stresses, and then adequate levels of cold tolerance. Even though winter peas are cold tolerant, there can be some issues with some of the varieties that flower early in the spring. Once they flower, their cold tolerance does decrease. So plain in that regard. So why a winter legume? These are showing two crops, or crops that were planted at different times. The left image was spring sown winter peas and winter lentils, and then on the right, the autumn sown or autumn planted winter peas and lentils. And both of these pictures were taken at the beginning of June in 2014. So you can see the autumn sown, obviously we already have flowering and maturation of the winter peas as well as the lentils, as compared to the spring sown, where we don't even have canopy cover yet. So maturity can have an influence our cover crop selections. This is looking at yield of those autumn sown or spring sown peas at three different locations Garfield, Pullman, and Dayton in Washington. As you can see, the winter peas, despite the location, had almost twice, or basically twice, the production in pounds per acre compared to the spring peas. So our cool season food legumes, the question is, are they ideal components in an organic cropping system? And as with everything, there are pros and cons. Our cool season food legumes require lower inputs, even in a conventional system. Obviously, being a legume, they fix atmospheric nitrogen for recycling of that nitrogen for a following crop. Their utilization can break weed and disease cycles, specifically in a cereal cropping system. And they are important in an established rotational crop and cereal-based rain-fed system. And obviously, there's that autumn sown opportunity, having that maturation in June as opposed to a spring sown crop. However, there are serious negative aspects as well. So some of the challenges, insect pressure. This is an image of pea seed weevil. You can see the damage there to the seed. They're poor competitors with weeds. And then there's also issues with soil-borne pathogens where there's limited tolerance to Pythium seed rot. Different strains, there's different tolerance, as well as issues with root rot. So there are some challenges within that food legume system. So there's also some challenges in regards to different needs with a winter pea. Maybe what we focus on in the breeding program is going to depend on ultimately the end use. And the end use will influence the traits of importance. Obviously, for any use, winter hardiness, disease tolerance, biotic stress tolerance, those are going to be important no matter what the ultimate end use is. However, if we are developing varieties for a food or a niche market for food consumption, obviously certain traits such as having large seed are going to be more important as opposed to if we're developing that variety or those winter peas for a cover crop, whereas seed size is desired to be much smaller, and obviously biomass is much important in a cover crop as opposed to a food use crop. So this is almost a reiteration of comparing varieties that are going to be established or selected for mainstream or food production for a pea food selection, and then varieties that are going to be developed for an input or going to be harvested for whether it's for seed production or if it's a biomass production for a cover crop. Then there's the other situation or the concern or challenge of biomass versus seed production. Obviously, someone needs to produce the seed to so we can end use it as a cover crop. And unfortunately, for seed production, the desired traits are going to be semi-dwarf, leafless with larger seed, whereas for a biomass crop or for a cover crop, obviously you want taller forage and more plant growth, true leaf production, and a smaller seed size. So there is that issue or that concern with we still need the crop to be planted and produced to produce the seed, but then our cover crop, we obviously don't want large seed production. So it kind of, it's a balance between those two very different goals. Moving on to the next program, the one that I'm the most familiar with, Dr. Gerald Smith at the Overton Center, where his breeding program consists of annual clovers or annual legumes, winter annual legumes, as well as some warm season legumes. And some of his major issues and concerns are ecoregion and soil adaptation, focusing as well on balanced seed production with other traits, seasonal biomass production, resistance to biotic stresses, adequate levels of cold tolerance, and seed survival or hard seed presence. So his cool season focus on within his program, our cool season annual crimson clover, which Edzard mentioned earlier, is very commonly utilized in East Texas or in parts of Texas. It's a winter active annual clover. It is well adapted to well-drained or upland sites, and it is tolerant of slightly acidic soils, but still prefers a soil pH of at least 6. It does have good seed production, and there's genetic variation for non-reseeding. So that is of interest, especially for a cover crop, to have a non-reseeding clover, so that clover doesn't become necessarily a weed issue for the following crop. Another one is Burseem clover, also a winter annual clover. It's better adapted to wet and more alkaline soils that we tend to see in the more central part of Texas as opposed to East Texas. It is tolerant of higher soil pHs, pH of 7 and above, and it's often soft-seeded, so we do not necessarily have a lot of seed survival that could impede on the following crop. And then annual sweet clover, which is pictured here. These pictures are actually out of Oregon. They are of a new variety of sweet clover called Silver River that Dr. Smith is responsible for. They are cold tolerant, adapted to upland, dry alkaline soils of a pH of 7 or higher. They're deep rooted and have excellent drought tolerance, which can be important depending on a particular region. So as area of work in our summer annual crops, our cowpea and lab. What's pictured here, all three pictures are of lab in East Texas or in Texas. Cowpeas can be utilized as part of a double crop system where harvested for seed or pulse crop. They are drought tolerant. They establish fairly quickly. They do have a range of pest resistant genetics that are available within cowpeas, and they have wide variation in days to maturity. Lab can also function as a double crop similar to cowpeas. They are drought tolerant. If you notice in this upper right hand corner, very large taproot that can go very deep, that provides drought tolerance for lab. We have range within species from perennials to annuals depending on the system. And then our lab are more palatable as a cattle grazing crop relative to cowpea. So they can be utilized as a forage as well. Cowpea and lab are also utilized for wildlife, for white-tailed deer use. They can be utilized as a forage crop for them as well. So his breeding objectives for crimson, for his winter annual clovers, crimson, Burseem, and the sweet clover. Winter growth, winter hardiness is obviously an important aspect. Quick rate for quick fall cover, cold tolerance, low hard seed to reduce the potential for that clover to become a weed in the following crop. And then nematode resistance is an important. And then our summer cover crop breeding objectives for cowpea are high biomass production, range of maturity to fit different systems, aphid resistance and nematode resistance, and then lab range of maturity to once again to fit different systems, and then anthracnose resistance. And what's pictured here are some different labs that lack anthracnose resistance, and then those, and this is in the same field, that do have anthracnose resistance. So that's some of his focus on lab. Also high biomass and then seed production traits as well. So moving on to the third program, Dr. Heathcliff Rade in Madison, Wisconsin. His focus has been on breeding hairy vetch, and he has focused on cold tolerance as well as winter growth of this hairy vetch. So his efforts actually started in 2004, well before Dr. McGee's or Dr. Smith's. So he has some older data that he started a lot earlier. So in 2004, his breeding target was fall-established plants that would persist and then have maximum biomass yield the following spring. So in that first cycle, we had 50 seedlings, 50 USDA plant introductions that were grown in a greenhouse and then transplanted into three Wisconsin sites and overseeded with turf. You can see those different locations. 49 plants were recovered across all three sites and then allowed to go to seed to develop 49 half-sib breeding lines. The second cycle he took in 2005-2006, he took those 49 half-sib families from 2004, directly seeded into rows in August of 2005 at two Wisconsin locations and overseeded with turf as well. The superior 60 plants from those locations were retained for seed production, so they were allowed to go to seed. And this is just a picture of one of those locations, and you can see the hairy vetch in those fields. Cycle 3 in 2006 and 2007, those 60 half-sib families were directly seeded into rows in August of 2006 at one site, one Wisconsin site, and overseeded with turf. And then the superior 112 plants were retained for seed production from that location. There were no vantage plantings during the fall of 2007, so a year was skipped, but those 112 half-sib lines were planted in 2008 in one location directly into glyphosate-killed tall fescue turf, so they were planted into stubble. In 2009, the plants were small due to grass competition and seed bulk was harvested. So you can see in the bottom pictures, maybe not quite as much vetch production as had been previously seen or in previous years. So his new effort is to increase seed of those best Wisconsin lines in 2015. And these are just some images from the current existing conditions for those new lines to increase seed. So in summary, there obviously is an increased interest in utilizing legumes as a cover crop or in different production systems as a cover crop, whether that production system's end goal is to produce a feed, or simply to provide nitrogen or provide cover with a cover crop for the following crop. Common themes in the three breeding programs that we just reviewed are obviously improved cold tolerance and winter biomass production, specifically for any of our winter annual or winter cover crops, whether it's hairy vetch, our winter peas, crimson clover, Burseem clover, or even sweet clover in Texas. Do need balance in seed production and biomass. Obviously, we do need seed production to plant and to create those cover crops for our producers. But obviously, we need to focus on varieties that provide the biomass that's needed to create a true cover crop. Pest resistance is going to be important across species, and as well as obviously with different pests, and those pests may depend on the ecoregion for that particular species. So that's the short, fast summary of those three systems or those three breeding projects, and I'll be happy to try to answer any questions.
We have time for questions.
Oh, Ed, sorry. All right. Edzard's question was, how does Lab Lab do in grazing, with grazing, and specifically at Overton? Lab Lab has poor grazing tolerance. They will overgraze it very quickly, so we do have to have some managed grazing to reduce that overgrazing of that particular crop. So limiting the time they're grazing. Even with wildlife, with white-tailed deer, they've had to do the same thing. Dr. Smith has actually worked with our wildlife biologists this past winter, and they limited, with fencing, they limited how much lab the deer had access to throughout the season to actually stretch the utilization of that forage through the season and not lose it within the first couple of weeks.
So that would then be another use of wildlife?
Yes, absolutely. They were an excellent, I don't know that they've put together any of that data, but they did track with game cameras the activity of wildlife or white-tailed deer on those plots, so there's potential there. If you are interested in more of Dr. Smith's work, specifically with Lab Lab in a cycle with, I think it was Lab Lab or cowpeas in a cycle with small grain rye, he does have a graduate student who has a graduate student poster this afternoon with her data on that cover cropping system with small grain rye. Yeah. All right. Okay, his question was on the hairy vetch trials, they were overseeded with turf, and I'm assuming your question is why, basically. Why were they overseeded with turf? That's an excellent question, and that might be to provide some ground cover and to kind of allow those plants to stay in one area, because if you let hairy vetch is such a vining plant, that it probably would have filled in, and some of your plants or your lines, it would have been hard to tell which variety was which. And that turf probably allows for some more separation of those different lines that he's trying to pick out. That's my assumption. Edzard may have an advantage.
And weed control is providing some competition.
Any additional questions?
All right, thank you.